The Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Will Cheryl please call the roll?
Chair Andrade.
Here.
Vice Chair Cheney.
Here.
Ranking Member Silvers excused. And Representatives Anton, Burfill.
Here.
Brackett.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Esposito.
Here.
Gilombardo. Harris.
Here.
Lamarca.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Placencia.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Yeager.
Here.
Have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Before we begin, I just want to remind everyone to please silence or turn off your electronic devices. Otherwise, thank you all for being here this morning. We're going to hear a few presentations on the status of some important information technology projects in both the Department of Economic Opportunity and the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. The Department of Economic Opportunity will outline their efforts in modernizing our reemployment assistance system, as well as the Consumer First Workforce System. If you were here 2 years ago, you'll recall the legislature passing what's called the REACH Act, and I'm looking forward to hearing an update about that. This will be followed by a highway safety update on motorist modernization. We'll begin first with Acting Secretary Meredith Ivey. And the Director of Economic Accountability and Transparency, Lindsay Volpe. Ladies, when you're ready, you can be recognized.
Mr. Chair? Good morning. Good morning, and thank you, Chair Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, and members of the committee. My name is Meredith Ivey, and it's my honor to serve as the Acting Secretary of the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity. I am joined today by DEO's Director of Economic Accountability and Transparency, Lindsay Volpe. We appreciate the opportunity to provide you with an update on the modernization effort. I'd also like to recognize and thank Representative Lamarca. He was the House sponsor for House Bill 1463 and has been a true champion for this project, and we appreciate your support for the department, sir. The implementation of this bill has remained a daily priority for our agency, and DEO's leadership team has been very hands-on with each project to deliver a modernized system on time, on budget, and one that focuses on the customers it serves. We have learned valuable lessons through this process and continue to diligently work towards our mutual goal of providing a better, more efficient, cloud-based system for Florida businesses and claimants that is easier to navigate and ready when needed. To begin, I'd like to provide a brief overview of the department's divisions and our state partners and how they align to our mission to serve communities, businesses, and Floridians. There are three divisions that make up DEO. The Division of Community Development provides grant opportunities to communities for projects related to infrastructure and broadband, helps communities with resiliency planning, and provides long-term disaster recovery and mitigation assistance to communities impacted by disasters. The Division of Strategic Business Development is DEO's economic development arm, working with our public-private partners to attract business investment to the state and further the governor's economic development mission. Finally, the Division of Workforce Services encompasses our economic data research team and one-stop programs and works with CareerSource Florida and 24 local workforce development boards to provide employment resources and workforce training across the state. The division also houses our reemployment assistance program, which is the focus of today's presentation. DEO's team is truly special, and I am proud of our continued dedication to serving Floridians. While DEO administers many important initiatives and programs, the reemployment modernization project remains our top priority. DEO recognizes the many challenges Floridians have faced throughout the pandemic, and we are committed to providing resources and relief to those who need it the most, while also following relevant federal and state laws. As we all know, the 2020 global health public health crisis placed a significant load on Florida's reemployment assistance system, commonly referred to as Connect. Prior to the pandemic, Florida was experiencing record low unemployment of 2.7% in February 2020. By May 2020, the global health emergency was being felt in Florida's economy, as it was across the nation, and Florida's unemployment rate rose to a historic high of 13.9%. In that same time frame, initial claims increased more than 100-fold, from less than 5,000 claims per week to more than 500,000 claims per week. In the 11 months that followed, Connect would receive a million more claims than in the last 8 years combined. The total priority during that time was to pay RA benefits as quickly as possible to eligible claimants. However, it became immediately clear that Connect needed a complete modernization to ensure scalability, security, and sustainability. During the 2021 legislative session, Governor DeSantis and the Florida legislature directed and provided historic funding for DEO to undertake the modernization effort. Following the passage of House Bill 1463 under Secretary Dane Eagle's leadership, DEO proposed a 2-year roadmap to better the system through modernization with a completion date of June 30th of this calendar year. This initial roadmap was informed by an assessment of Connect performed by ISF between November 2020 and February 2021, which provided an overview of the current state of the system, recommended actions to be taken, and a proposed implementation schedule. The 2-year roadmap represents a significant amount of work, and thanks to former Secretary Eagle's leadership, we've already achieved several key milestones that drive value to Floridians, including the submission of 38 federally mandated reports directly from the data warehouse, which improves overall system performance. We have processed more than 6.1 million reemployment assistance claims since March of 2020. We launched the Reemployment Assistance Help Center in March of 2021, which has received and resolved more than 5.63 million claimant, employer, and third-party administrator cases. We have also prevented more than $23 billion in fraudulent benefit payments by deploying several mitigation strategies, including multi-factor authentication and other front and back-end detection and prevention measures that ensure payments are made only to eligible claimants. And we have migrated the Reemployment Customer Call Center to the cloud, which ensures all callers have 24/7 access to self-service options via phone. Before transitioning to the next slide, I'd like to mention, thanks to the governor's leadership, the leadership of the legislature, the state of Florida has demonstrated incredible economic resilience the past couple of years, and we have surpassed pre-pandemic unemployment levels, most recently reporting a 2.6 unemployment rate. Modernization efforts include not only addressing immediate system performance and functional improvement needs, but also continuously modernizing the system with a focus on the customer experience. I think it's fair to say we all share a mutual goal to have a better experience when using the system, whether you're the claimant or the employer. Prioritizing the customer's needs are at the forefront of our effort, such as the front-end improvements that will reduce the time it takes to file benefits, updating customer-facing screens so they are easier to navigate, and provide even more self-service options. At the end of the 2-year roadmap, which ends again on June 30th of this year, DEO will transition from the foundational work of providing an enhanced customer experience to the work of continuous modernization. Pursuant to Section 443 of the Florida statutes, beginning in October of this calendar year, DEO will begin an annual report submission to the Governor, Senate President, and House Speaker to provide a summary of system improvements that were made the previous fiscal year and a 3-year outlook for recommended improvements, including projected costs and timeframes for completion that will maintain the system's security, scalability, sustainability, and accessibility. The bottom line of continuous modernization is that the system is always ready and when needed to meet the needs of claimants and employers during both the peaks and valleys for years to come. The annual report will also be used to inform future legislative budget requests, to focus on implementing back-end system improvements to facilitate faster claims processing, which will in effect reduce the amount of time it takes for claimants to receive their benefits. The two-year modernization roadmap focuses on establishing a strong foundation and upgrading several components of the new system while building new customer-facing screens to help users navigate the same more easily. This effort consists of 19 total projects to address system infrastructure, software, data and analytics, and security for the Reemployment Assistance Program. Infrastructure projects will support the capability to rapidly scale both the system and customer call center to ensure it is ready and available no matter how many users need to use the system at any given time. Software projects support the architecture of the system and improve the way users receive information from and interact with the system. Data and analytics projects promote greater collaboration through data sharing, not just within DEO, but also among our partner agencies, sharing key data for more efficient claims processing. Ensuring a secure system is critical to reducing disruptions to system operations and the risk of bad actors accessing personal and business information. While these projects align nicely within these four separate categories, there is a great deal of interdependency between these projects. Floridians deserve a system that meets their needs, not the other way around. To deliver this, DEO is using an agile approach to implement the projects. Agile means robust testing is conducted at multiple stages throughout the project's lifecycle to detect and remediate deficiencies or risks as early as possible. The roadmap ends June 30th, and by late spring, all projects will have initiated or completed testing. Testing will guide our actions to ensure the system is operational before going live. As we've discussed, these 19 projects represent a significant undertaking to improve the system while also ensuring it remains available to Floridians seeking services. DEO has not been doing this in a vacuum. We know we can't operate in silos. So we've leaned on input and expertise from our various partners, even beyond what is statutorily required. DEO has regularly engaged and sought input from the Florida Digital Service, Department of Revenue, and the Department of Financial Services as required by House Bill 1463, as well as the National Association of State Workforce Agencies to ensure we are aligned with best practices and established improved processes to ensure we deliver an improved customer experience. We have a great relationship with our independent validation and verification vendor, in other words, our monitoring vendor, to work regularly on system improvements and identify opportunities to mitigate risk in real time. They also help us stay focused on our timeline and budget so we complete the two-year roadmap on time. This slide gives a nice visual of how the 19 projects work in harmony with each other to address the top five structural deficiencies of the current Connect system through modernization. Our approach was informed by the ISF report, which contemplated four options for system modernization. A hybrid approach was selected, which enables timely enhancements and customizations that best align RA program needs with technology optimization, flexibility, moving forward. To quote our former Secretary Dan Eagle, in previous committee meetings, he used the example of SpaceX and how they use elements of the shuttle system in their state-of-the-art rockets to explain it doesn't make sense to discard what is working, but better focus on what is not working and fixing what's broken. The completion of these infrastructure and architecture projects lay the necessary foundation to support ongoing improvements that increase system accessibility, security, sustainability, modularity, and scalability. Perhaps more important, transitioning the system to a cloud environment helps ensure the system has the ability to scale up or down quickly to adjust to fluctuation and future workload demands. I'd like to invite Lindsay Volpe, our Director of Accountability and Transparency, to share more about these projects and our progress and her role with the department since August of 2021. She is to be commended for her hard work and efforts in organizing these projects and keeping us on time and on budget. I keep saying that.
Thank you, Secretary Ivey, Chair Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, and members of the committee. The role of the Office of Economic Accountability and Transparency is designed to provide leadership for DEO's priority issues and ensure these critical issues are communicated clearly to the public. Recognizing the importance of the Reemployment Assistance Program and the role it plays in supporting Floridians' path to economic self-sufficiency, DEO launched a website dedicated to the Reemployment Assistance Modernization Program to ensure transparency throughout the effort. The website includes updates about the progress being made toward modernizing our system, answers to frequently asked questions, documents related to our modernization effort, including the monthly reports DEO submits to the legislature on a monthly basis, as well as quarterly reports we receive from our third-party oversight vendor, which provides independent validation and verification services. It also includes a feature where Floridians can submit questions directly to DEO about the modernization effort, which we use to further supplement our frequently asked questions page. DEO also uses this website to communicate key updates to Floridians and provide information about the progress we've made to date, not just about the overall program, but also about each of the projects. It includes information about our procurements and executed contracts and the use of funds appropriated to us by the legislature. We put these measures into place on day one, and we'll continue updating or fulfilling our commitment to transparency throughout the two-year roadmap. To ensure our remaining 162 days to go live are clearly focused on mission-critical activities, DEO implemented a recommendation from its independent validation and verification vendor to conduct a self-assessment about halfway through the roadmap to identify which projects and project components are essential to delivering an improved user experience. As a result, DEO sharpened the scope of several projects by deferring some project components and one project to be addressed in continuous modernization. Sharpened scopes benefit the modernization effort by avoiding the introduction of risk to our existing system, prioritizing resources and staffing for critical path projects, and clearly communicating what efforts are necessary to make the new user interface operational. By utilizing the sharpened scope, the two-year roadmap will be completed on time and within budget. I'm happy to report DEO has completed 5 projects to date and anticipates 2 additional projects will be complete by June 30th, which are highlighted in green. Several more projects are underway, and many of these projects represent areas of focus for continuous modernization, including the security architecture audit project, which has been deferred to continuous modernization as it is intended to be conducted once all other roadmap activities are complete. Simply put, the 2-year roadmap requires DEO to focus on specific activities for these projects to set a foundation for our long-term commitment to ongoing improvement of our system. And our work doesn't stop there. What we will have achieved through the 2-year roadmap lays the foundation for the work ahead of us to continue providing Floridians with a secure, sustainable, and scalable system. I'd like to take the opportunity to share with you what we've accomplished thus far and what's to come. DEO has alleviated some of the load on the existing system by creating a data warehouse where RA data is stored to support our reporting activities. We've also put claim information at system users' fingertips by making the RA Help Center available as an alternative option to calling our call center. Business processes that can be optimized have been identified to facilitate the faster processing of RA claims, and we've completed an assessment of our system's architecture to identify opportunities to further strengthen our system's integrity. Finally, several significant system upgrades have been complete that support the framework and software behind that support our back-end data transactions in our system. The two projects that are anticipated to be complete in the next 30 days will improve the accuracy of RA data for 39 federally mandated reports that the U.S. Department of Labor uses to award funding for our program. It will also improve and establish a process for maintaining technical documentation to ensure our system enhancements align with the RA program's needs. 10 additional projects are currently being implemented that will benefit system users in several ways. Some of these projects will ensure the system is scalable, which will allow all users to access the system even when demand for services is high. And establishing an alert system DEO can use to monitor trends in system usage and add in reinforcements when needed. Other projects will support DEO's ability to deploy changes to customer-facing screens faster when there are changes to state and federal laws. Several projects that are more technical in nature will promote system efficiency by leveraging multiple software solutions to administer the RA program. Simply put, moving away from the monolithic, one-size-fits-all approach to information technology equips DEO with the ability to more easily modernize our system and adapt to future technology or program changes. In fiscal year 21-22, the legislature appropriated $92 million to modernize the RA system. As submitted in the December 2022 report and spend plan, DEO spent $16.8 million of the total appropriation in the 2021-22 fiscal year. To date, in the current fiscal year, DEO has spent an additional $6.6 million, and we have another $20.5 million in contract obligations for the remainder of the fiscal year. When actual expenditures and contract obligations are considered, DEO expects to spend a total $48.6 million. This includes more than 120 contracts that currently support the system's maintenance and operations, such as software licenses, staff augmentation and support, and technology tools. Additionally, it is important to note that there are three mission-critical procurements which are currently advertised or undergoing contract negotiations, and that will significantly increase our expected total spending for the current fiscal year. The appropriation also supports five major procurements, which demonstrate the magnitude of the additional resources dedicated to the program, from people to software to third-party expertise. DEO has a very hands-on approach with its vendors, which helps improve quality, accountability, and transparency, and all contracts are deliverables-based, which means payments are made only after the work is complete. Some of these contract deliverables and invoices will not be received this fiscal year, and therefore some expenditures will not be realized until next fiscal year. We expect to use the full $92 million appropriated for system modernization and anticipate some funds will need to be reverted and reappropriated for fiscal year 23-24. Following contract execution of the three procurements I mentioned earlier, DEO will have a more precise estimate of the amount to be reverted and reappropriated. And now I'll turn it back over to Secretary Ivey. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you both very much. Members, are there any questions? Representative Antone, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And it's not a question, it's just a statement. Thank you for coming by yesterday. Looks like the strategy and roadmap that you all have chosen is an excellent strategy, and looks like you'll get it right the first time. So, great job.
Thank you, sir. Representative LaMarca.
Thank you, Chair. Secretary, thanks for the update yesterday and what you're doing, DEO. I think it's a tremendously important agency and the work that was normally done outside of a pandemic as well. That said, and you may have to get back with us on this, but the part of what we passed in tax policy a couple of years ago depended on, kind of relied upon the refilling or backfilling of the unemployment insurance trust fund mm-hmm. in order for us to get to something else on local business tax or business rent tax. Are you able to provide an update? I know that Mr. Schrader is able to give me an update a few weeks ago and maybe kind of where we are with that at some point.
Mr. Chair, Absolutely. I'd love to get with the team and revenue to get the latest data, but that's certainly something we monitor. The trust fund is in a good posture. I do get quarterly updates on it, so happy to follow up with you, sir, on more details.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Cheney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming and putting that comprehensive presentation together for us. Just first, I'll start with a comment before I get to my questions. I tried to sign up on the site and was given an error message, but it did not tell me what the problem was so that I could correct it. So maybe something to look into, and I would be happy to volunteer as your person to test your systems on that because I'm not real great at getting signed up on websites. So if I can do it, anybody can do it, okay? So some questions. Processing time. You mentioned you're increasing processing time. So pre-pandemic, where were we in processing time, and what do you anticipate it to be for the future with the new system?
Mr. Chair, first, thank you for your offer to help test and focus group. That is certainly something we'll take you up on. And but if you have a screenshot of the error message, I'd love to take a look. Well, we'd be happy to follow up with you to look at what that might be, and that also go back to the plain language and the screens we're talking about. It's part of modernization. That's certainly part of the effort. Regarding the processing times, I'm happy to follow up with more specifics. I actually had a meeting with our RA team just this week asking, you know, what can we continue to do as we await completion of modernization to improve the processing times. You know, clearly, during the pandemic, the wait time was not ideal. We know that. We've been able to significantly reduce the multi-hours waits and frustrations being felt by folks. Right now, we have several strategies to help people. We do have additional resources dedicated to our customer call lines. We have the RA Help Center, which is the online self-service option. We have also initiated partnerships with local workforce boards to offer in-person services for those who are just having a hard time online or on the phones for whatever reason. And even at our building across the street at Caldwell, we've opened up a welcome suite to take claimants when they arrive at our door during business hours. So again, it's the wait time has improved. It's not where we want it to be. We know it needs to continue to go down, but we'll be happy to follow up with more data on that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let me clarify my question. Pre-pandemic, what was the processing time? 30 minutes, 2 hours? And then what do you expect the processing time to be once the system is done? 30 minutes, 2 hours?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. Pre-pandemic, I would like to double check with the team on that pre-pandemic wait time. Quite frankly, I think it depended on the week or the nature of the call. Some calls are frankly harder, that take longer than others, but I will certainly get that for you. I don't have that at my fingertips. Ideally, as we await modernization, we're still thinking through what should that ideal wait time be. Ideally, I think you would not want anyone to wait more than 30 minutes, but again, that's something we're actively working through. I hope to have more concrete updates for you in the months to come.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So speaking of the call assistance,
yes.
Pre-pandemic, what was the wait time on a call, and what do you expect the wait time on a call to be once the system is up and running?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would love the opportunity to get with the team to get some details for you. Thank you.
Members, any further questions? I think 2 years ago, it very much highlighted for me the critical role that the Department of Economic Opportunity plays in assisting in natural disasters and catastrophes that hit our state. So I appreciate just how much assistance the Department of Economic Opportunity had to provide and did provide to Floridians, and appreciate the update this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, sticking with the Department of Economic Opportunity, we have Ms. Katie Crowfoot to provide us a status update on the Consumer Workforce Information Technology System. That was a mouthful, but whenever you're ready, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, committee members. My name again is Katie Crowfoot. I'm director of the Reimagining Career and Adult Education Office within the Executive Office of the Governor. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Jackie Schaefer from the REACH office and Kent Whittington from DEO. They are the project program directors for this project. So, so thrilled they could join us today. So thank you for having me here today to discuss the Florida's Consumer First Workforce System, or what we call the FL Wins program. This is a system that will help Floridians overcome barriers to self-sufficiency by enhancing and streamlining access to workforce development services. So the Consumer First Workforce System is a product of the REACH Act that was passed into law in 2021. This groundbreaking bipartisan legislation is a comprehensive blueprint for enhancing access, alignment, and accountability across the state's workforce development system. The REACH Act included 118 pages of policy that has and will continue to bring positive change to Florida systems. At a high level, the REACH Act directs the state and specifically the REACH office to align and coordinate Florida's workforce development system, create a no wrong door entry strategy where Floridians may access services from any workforce partner, increase accountability by requiring workforce training services to be performance-based, and coordinate and facilitate data sharing agreements of the state's workforce performance data among state agencies. So in order to achieve this overarching goal of the REACH Act, the statute created a consumer-first workforce system. The system is intended to be an innovative system that seeks to provide Floridians improved access to workforce programs and services through interoperable systems and shared integrated data. As we look to integrate systems and share data, it's vital to have the right partners at the table. And those partners are also defined in statute: the Department of Economic Opportunity, the Department of Children and Families, the Department of Education, CareerSource Florida, Florida Digital Service, and the REACH Act, and the REACH Office. So achieving the REACH Act's goal of no wrong door entry strategy requires implementation of this system. We're integrating existing data silos to improve one-stop services to job seekers. So we're really trying to break down those silos and make sure everybody's working together. The vision for the new system includes common intake, needs screening, case management, training information, performance reporting, and customer service tracking. And the system will efficiently match job seekers to training and employment opportunities and resources. The three main components of the FL Wins program are the customer portal, the common intake form, and the data hub. The customer portal will enhance the customer experience through a single shared account, which provides a common access point to update information, access program information, and submit common intake applications. The portal will enable Floridians to more easily obtain the support they need by offering multiple points of entry to apply for services and receive information. The common intake form is a feature of the customer portal that will collect information that is needed for all programs a Floridian is interested in. This form will reduce duplicative information being entered by agency staff and Floridians requesting services, and refer them to services targeted to meet their needs. The data hub will be created by developing the systems and data integration capabilities to share data between existing agencies' systems of record in an effective and efficient way, leveraging modern technologies and a cloud-based solution. It will help agencies better serve Floridians by providing a comprehensive overview of services and a greater availability to link them with services they may need. Those three components are the main components of the FL Wins program. Now I'd like to review the work and decision points to date, as well as the roadmap moving forward. So immediately following the enactment of the REACH Act, DEO engaged a vendor to conduct a feasibility study. The study looked at the core workforce partners, relevant systems of record, and programs. And the core workforce partners that are included are DEO, Department of Education, and Department of Children and Families. The result of the feasibility study were three different alternative paths forward. The first option was a complete overhaul of all three agency systems to build one centralized system. The second integrated the agency systems but did not contemplate a customer portal. And the third was a hybrid integration that included enhanced data sharing and integration and allowed for a customer portal that facilitates an intake process that each agency can use. So based on the recommendation of the feasibility study, which heavily weighted factors like the timeline and the cost, the third option was selected. FL Wins has taken a modular approach to vendor procurements due to the significant level of investments required to transform both business and technological processes and systems that will affect the workforce partners agencies that are involved. The modular approach establishes a series of procurements, each geared to hire vendors with specific capabilities based on individual specialties. This allows for maximum flexibility in selecting vendors that align to project priorities and preferred technical solutions. The first phase of the vendor procurements included independent verification and validation, business support and technical advisory, and business process reengineering and transformational change management. These procurements were all either completed or the request for quote was on the street prior to October 1st, 2022. Included in the current year's budget was proviso language instructing DEO to complete certain activities prior to October 1st, and DEO worked diligently to meet those deadlines. The second phase of vendor procurements are intended to include the system integrator, the data hub, and the customer portal vendors. So in scope systems, to date, the following programs and systems have been identified as being in scope for the FLWINS program. So DEO, as you heard, has multiple programs and applications, and some were identified for this project, including the Reemployment Assistance Program and Connect System, which you heard about previously. In addition, the state's local workforce development board utilized the Workforce Information Database and Employ Florida. The modernization efforts of those systems are anticipated to be incorporated into the FLWINS program as well. DCF has one major program and application identified, the Office of Economic Self-Sufficiency and its Access system, which administers SNAP and TANF benefits. Access has several components, and the FLWINS program will integrate all of them. DCF is embarking on a modernization effort now with Access, and the FLWINS program will incorporate into planning and implementation efforts. DOE has a few programs and applications within the Division of Mine Services, the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, and the Division of Career and Adult Education that are in scope. Division of Mine Services and Division of Vocational Rehabilitation are both utilizing case management systems that are under modernization efforts currently, and they will merge into one system, the AWARE system, and we're planning on incorporating that as well. Additionally, DOE is embarking on modernizing their current career and technical education data analytics dashboard. We will incorporate that one as well. That's considered in scope. The Florida College System institutions and school districts each manage their own data systems and will be surveyed on the technical specifications of those individual systems. During development, this information will be used to ensure that FLWINS program is able to connect seamlessly to a variety of systems and incorporate those as well. So the FLWINS system program aims to minimize duplicative efforts for Floridians seeking services by utilizing a shared intake form to reduce data entry, the data hub to share information between programs, and a referral system to streamline access to services. And the graphic in front of you is a visualization of that. Down at the bottom, the yellow circle, that is what we would consider the data hub. And so you can see the job seekers and applicants will provide data that will go into the data hub. It'll go through the systems and then back out through to the users and to the programs. So with a program of this size spanning multiple state agencies, it's imperative to design a governance structure that is clear, flexible, and allows for partner agencies to meaningfully participate. DEO is the fiscal agent for the FLWINS funding. They play a key role in vendor management from running the procurements to the day-to-day operations. However, the FLWINS program will have impacts on each of the workforce partner systems and processes. This governance structure accounts for that by ensuring that each agency has representation at every level of program management, down to the work groups and project teams. So the first year, the Consumer First Workforce System feasibility study was completed December of 2021, with the planning phase of FLWINS beginning in April of 2022. The program has passed several milestones during the first year of implementation that has kept the program on schedule for timely completion while continuing to ramp up for year two implementation activities. As you can see on the screen, we have some of the first year activities. They've released three procurements for vendors, and they've begun to work: independent verification, business support and technical change, and then business process reengineering and transformational change management. Some exciting news there. DEO was able to execute that contract yesterday, so we continue to be on track, and kudos to DEO for the good work on that contract. We're excited, and I think we've already been meeting with the new vendor, so we're really excited about that. They've already onboarded the two previous vendors, IV&V and business support and technical change. We have approved an FL WINS program charter. We are finalizing the program management plan, and two work groups have convened, the IT Shared Services Team and the Contract Oversight Team. So the FL WINS program is on a five-year schedule with an anticipated completion date of December 2026. Currently, the program is in the first year, as I mentioned, the planning stage, ending in March 2023, and the first year of implementation activities will begin in April of 2023. The FL WINS program is currently on schedule and within cost and scope. In 2023, it's going to be a busy year. The program will convene the remaining work groups and teams, stand up the FL WINS program management office and accompanying program management plan, continue to onboard the BPRTCM vendor, engage stakeholders through focus groups, and gather requirements for the second phase of procurements. That's the system integrator, the data hub, and the customer portal. The 2023 calendar year will also be focused on, will be focused on implementation activities around partner collaboration and still trying to continue to break down barriers to interoperability of the services. So finally, the budget. DEO has been appropriated $250 million in general revenue funds that utilize the U.S. Treasury State Fiscal Recovery Fund. $100 million was appropriated in fiscal year 21-22, and $150 million was appropriated in fiscal year 22-23. To date, $25 million of the $250 million appropriated for the FL WINS program has been released to DEO. During this fiscal year, DEO plans to expend $9.7 million in the included categories, as you can see in front of you. Currently, the FL WINS program is on track and within budget. So happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, members. Are there questions? Representative Harris.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for your wonderful presentation as well, and thank you for this presentation. Thank you for coming around to speak with us. It was great to have a little bit of insight before the presentation this morning. I don't have so much a question as much as a comment. This is a really good point to make that infrastructure is more than just physically tangible things like bridges, and it is also cloud infrastructure. And I think that this is really great when silos open up and share information. And I'm really excited about this because it's the beginning of it. And I think this is going to make it easier for our constituents to seek those services. So really looking forward to how to watch this process as it builds to completion. Thank you.
Representative Antone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming by yesterday. And I think you all are doing a great job with the system. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? All right, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
All right, our third and final presentation. We're moving agencies now to the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles for an update on our motorist modernization project. Today we have the Director of the Office of Motorist Modernization, Terrence Samuel, here to give a presentation. Sir, whenever you are ready, you are recognized.
Good morning, and Chair Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, Ranking Member Silvers, and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to provide an overview of the Motorist Modernization Program that's initiated by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. And before I proceed any further, I'd like to acknowledge Executive Director Kerner, who was confirmed 2 days ago as the Executive Director for Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. He's here present with us, so we appreciate him being here. I am Terrence Samuel. I am the Director of the Office of Motorist Modernization within Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. It is housed within the IT division of the department. And presenting with me today is Chad Hutchison, who is our Chief Technology Officer. I would like to, before I go any further, thank this committee. I think this is usually the first committee that I speak to each year that we started this modernization effort, and thank you so much for your support. And for the new members of this committee, the modernization effort is the department's initiative to modernize our legacy driver's license and motor vehicle applications. So, and don't worry, I'm not going to read all of this, but we're going to go through this, and it's going to be informative, but we'll move through it quickly. When we started the modernization effort, I came down for one of those first initial meetings, and I made comparisons to the technology from several years ago, like the TRS-80 by the Tandy company. Some of you probably know what that is, and the Betamax back in the 80s and the Sony Walkman. And I made the comparison that some of the technologies we were using at the time was the same age with our systems. But even at the department, the leadership, and I was so excited about this new job, and I still am, and they would tell me, Terrence, it's not just enough to say that the system is old. There are other things we need to talk about. And so I've since learned just because something has a little age, like myself, doesn't mean it's no longer useful. So indulge me for a second, a brief history with the department from an organizational structure. So back in the day, the department had a division of motor vehicles and a division of driver's license, and they were separate. And the systems that supported them were separate as well. But as time moved on and laws changed, we realized that there needed to be more integration between the Division of Motor Vehicles and the Division of Driver's License. And the department decided to merge those two divisions. Well, the systems remained separate. And so we started doing workarounds and patches and building upon old technologies. And it got to the point that technology was hampering services that we could offer to our customers. We were hampering the business from providing those services to our customers. So that led to three things I want to point out here. Item number two, insufficient use of our resources. We had resources that were spending thousands of hours just simply manually intervening to keep those old systems up and running. And I also want to point out 4B, inability to provide customers with comprehensive data. We literally would have cases where customers would go to one of our offices, they would perform a motor vehicle transaction, a week or so later receive correspondence from the department that there was a problem with their DL record. And customers, I was just in your office, why didn't you tell me that? Well, the two systems didn't talk to each other. And then The last one I'll point out here is 4C, inability to meet customers' demand for self-service. And this is one that's dear to me. When we started the modernization effort, my team and I would travel around the state, and we would literally sit and watch clerks take care of customers as they walked into the office. And if someone didn't have everything that they needed at the time, the person would say, well, can I take care of this online? Do I have to come back to the office? And pretty much 95% of the time, it was, yeah, you got to come back to the office because we were not offering the services online. So when we decided the modernization effort, when we embarked on this effort, one of the things that we did was we went out and talked to other states who had started their modernization effort. And sad to say, some of the states, unfortunately, had experienced failures in their attempt to modernize their legacy systems. Some of the states had experienced multiple failures, and there are some that are still, that I've talked to from several years ago, that are still trying to modernize their systems and not, they haven't been able to do so. So we tried to take those lessons into account. And one of the biggest things was, don't do it as a big bang. And so we decided to break our modernization effort up into three phases. Phase one, all things driver's license. So we redesigned the old driver's license and system into what we call the Online Registration and Identity Operating Network Order System. It's called ORION. And ORION is a suite of applications that, once I get to phase two, you'll see we're going to add the motor vehicle applications into that suite as well. We created a new customer portal, which I'm very proud of, that I'm going to talk about here in more detail. And also, we designed a new customer database. And to your support, was $37.3 million for phase two. There again, thank you for your support of these modernization efforts. So some of the benefits and efficiencies we hope to gain, and we have, point out a couple of these here. Build a system that is sustainable and scalable. Remember I told you earlier, we were hampered by not being able to integrate new technologies. Now, at least on the driver's license side that we've completed, phase one is completed, we can do that. And system integrations are not small, but it's easier for us now to integrate things into that driver's license system, part of Orion. We have expanded our customer service delivery options. Customers don't always want to come into an office for government services. You don't always go to an office for anything. If you can do it online these days, you want to do it, not just government services. So they want to do it in person if they choose to, if they want to do it by phone, if they want to do it by chatbot, if they want to do it by mobile devices or a customer portal, all of which we can do now after completing phase one. And we wanted to take advantage of cloud computing opportunities, which we can do so now. So let me go into a little more detail about the portal. We developed these modernized systems, and of course we concentrated on the in-office applications, but also, like I mentioned, we wanted to focus on giving customers other opportunities as well. We've expanded some things online by allowing customers to clear certain sanctions online. You can get a sanction for failing to pay a traffic fine or leaving the scene of an accident or failure to complete a court-ordered school. So some of these sanctions you can now clear online through our customer portal and print out your clearance letter at home. You can get notifications about your record through our customer portal. And previously, prior to the completion of phase one, we offered no commercial driver's license self-service options on our portal. Now we do. So now that's not for hazmat endorsement. You still got to come to the office for that. But however, if you submit an application for a hazmat endorsement and you're wondering, what's the status? You can go into our customer portal and find out the status of your hazmat application. Often we mail correspondence to our customers and they lose it or they come to the office and the clerk doesn't have it. And now every correspondence that we send to our customer is included in our customer portal. You can log into your account, download the correspondence. And by the way, when you get to the office, the clerk there will have access to that correspondence as well. So, and one of the last things, but certainly not least, we have revamped the service that we provide to our active duty military. Before, if you are active duty military, you need an extension for your DL. There's all this cumbersome paperwork you had to do. Now they can do it through our customer portal as well. So we're very proud of the work that we've done there. So I want to briefly go over some of these accomplishments that we've achieved in phase one. Training. I'm told by some of the field offices that they can now quickly move a person from hiring them and getting them on the front line and being productive in servicing customers a lot faster. Phase one also brought us into compliance with federal regulations, with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. And the penalty there was if we didn't do that, we were going to have our CDL program decertified and they would withhold our national highway funds. So certainly we didn't want that. And to this date, more than 2 million portal accounts have been created. Some more that I'll quickly go over here as well. Our uninsured motorist rate is dropping as well. I just realized I didn't have my glasses. I was wondering why I was struggling. The ability to verify and initiate cancellations of policies that previously could take months, now we can do within a week. So we have more timely insurance data to assist the department ensuring that all insurance companies are meeting the 10-day statutory reporting requirement. So in calendar year 2021, the reinstatement fees that we collected for all of 2021 was $41 million for the entire year. For calendar year 2022, from January to November, $53 million. So look at that increase that we have achieved in just a year. And these are things that the business areas back at the department wanted in a new system, and that has helped us make this achievement. So we're, happy to report that as well. And then we're able now to reduce the error rates
within Orion, because we're sending information to the signature pad. The customer can verify that everything you typed in is correct. They can look at the photo to determine if this is the right photo and if they want to proceed. And of course, to date, well, in 2022, we have processed 6.7 million transactions in the new Orion system. We got the system installed and implemented within 6 months, and this was during COVID as well. Phase two is going to be that we're currently working on is all things motor vehicles. There's titles and registrations is the main driver of that. One of the other systems we have there is for the International Fuel Tax Agreement and International Registration Plan. This is services to motor carriers. So that's a system that we're going to purchase and that we are not building ourselves. And the Florida Smart ID, which we are going to go into a little more detail about. And we're going to be adding more detail, adding more transactions into the customer portal for phase two as well, more motor vehicle transactions. The motor vehicle system is twice as big as the driver's license system, twice the number of requirements, twice the complexity. The budget for that system, our LBR request for this year, is $9.9 million, with anticipated total costs of $73.2 million. And just briefly, a couple things that we want to add for the portal for phase two. You're still going to be able to get notifications. We're going to give businesses the ability to manage their fleets. If they want, they have a fleet of vehicles, you have a business, and you have certain vehicles that you want to include it in your renewal or not to renew them, you can do that and manage that through our new customer portal as well. And just because we haven't implemented everything within phase two at this point, there are things that we have implemented along the way. I just talked about the International Fuel Tax Agreement, the IFTRP system was what we call it. So if you are a carrier and you have a IRP plate, but Florida's not included as one of your states, or if you just have a straight plate from another state and you need to travel within Florida, you have to have a trip permit in order before you actually come into Florida. We have revamped that system. We put that system out in production in October of 2021, so the truckers can use that to get a trip permit. Our new customer portal, we have some small amount of motor vehicle transactions in it right now. These were existing transactions that were online before. But as a citizen, if you just want to come and do a quick renewal, you don't want to create a portal account, we have what we call Express Renewal. We put that in production in March of 22 of last year. And we have a renewal system. We have integrated enterprise content management. And, of course, the Florida Smart ID first release was in November of 2021 and then February 2022 for remote in-app enrollment. Phase three of our modernization effort, of course, we haven't started, but the main thing here is business services. These are our licensing systems for commercial entities such as DUI programs or driving schools. We're going to add services to help us regulate dealers and for them to report and get notifications as well through our systems. And we're going to be modernizing the crash reporting database system as well. So Florida Smart ID, this was added into phase two of the modernization effort. Florida Smart ID is a mobile driver's license. Several states and various countries are working to develop a mobile driver's license. And I think I stated last year, it's not a fad. It's not simply the latest gadget or technology. It is the way the IDs are going to be utilized in the future. Everything is moving to mobile and on your phone. The implementation of this MDL is just very important. Chad and I are talking prior to this presentation, and we're saying we probably should have had a count of how many states are doing it. It'd probably be easier to say states that are not. There's just several states that are working on this right now. And with the Florida Smart ID, of course, there was legislation, which you all know better than I, that had to be passed, but a couple that I point out here is that in 322-15, the drivers must carry a physical credential as well. And the thing that we're working toward right now to add to the Florida Smart ID is that the registration insurance data would be part of this application as well. Our deadline to have that incorporated is July 1st of this year. That will be incorporated into the Florida Smart ID. Right now, the department really hasn't done any type of major advertising whatsoever of the Florida Smart ID. I think last year when I was here, there were articles that were written about the mobile driver's license. Folks have gone out. It's currently available in the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. We have about 81,000 folks that have found it, downloading it, and have it on their mobile device. So one of the things that we do when we go out and talk is relying parties. People want to know, where can I use it? And we talk about use cases. Of course, law enforcement. If law enforcement stops you and you have a Florida Smart ID and they have the ability to read it, we are piloting law enforcement with the Florida Highway Patrol as well. If they have the ability to read it, they can read it. But some of the other things we do with relying parties, we educate them. A lot of states jumped out early on mobile DL and just decided to do a flash pass. Just basically put an image of the license on the phone and you show that. Well, anyone with great Photoshop skills, you can get past that. So you have to have a separate device, and I'm getting to Chad's ear a little bit, but there's a separate device that we employ that enables you to read it. But there are several use cases and the security around this. A young lady goes into a bar. It's an age-restricted thing, of course. The bouncer, currently with your driver's license, he can see her address, everything on that car. But with the mobile driver's license, you only need to verify that she's of age to get into the establishment. So, and one of the things that we've talked to car rental companies, we talked to other state agencies, credit card companies, like I mentioned, retailers that sell age-restricted products, healthcare organizations, and we're now beginning to work with TSA to get the Florida Smart ID accepted, for air travel as well. So we're excited about that. But as far as more details about how it works, I'm going to ask our CTO, Chad Hutchison, to come up on our last two slides and give you an overview.
Thanks for your recognition.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee. I'm going to briefly cover several design elements that I think will explain how it works, and hopefully it'll dispel a lot of the myths around mobile driver's license. Like Terrence mentioned, this has been sort of in the works for years, and some states got out in front of this and did implementations that now they're retreating and sort of retrofitting, to what we're at today. And with this, I want to start out with what he mentioned. This is an app. Very simply, you install it as an app on a phone. It can be an iPhone or it can be an Android. There's an enrollment process, a secure enrollment process, where you download your credential and get it on your phone. And you can see in the diagram there from left to right, that would be the Smart ID on the left, also called mobile driver's license. I use that term interchangeably. On the right is what we call verifier. Now, this is an important design element to this. It requires a bookend sort of process, device to device. There is no flash pass implementation of this for the reasons that Terrence mentioned. It's really easy to spoof that no matter how many security features you put in visually. I've seen some states where they do the rotating head and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's really easy to hack that. With this, it's relying on the same security that you're using for banking transactions online, public key infrastructure. It's all based on strong encryption, and that is key to this. It is contactless. There is no need on the right side of this for somebody to grab the device or touch the device. It's all over the wire. It's using Bluetooth, which it's doing the same thing that your phone is doing when you're, on your headset or you're streaming to your car. It's using Bluetooth, Wi-Fi aware, and some other things to communicate with the devices. The other thing, and you can see this, present, consent, verify. This is key. Everything is consent-based. And what I mean by that, to use the example of what Terrence mentioned about purchasing an age-restricted product, if I go into an establishment and I'm going to purchase some alcohol, I have to consent that I'm doing that as the smart ID holder. There's no business where they're pulling information from my phone. And this is for all use cases, not just age verification. That's a critical component. And it goes beyond that, too. You can actually drill down into which data element you're actually consenting to, and you can uncheck those. So it's very powerful. And you can kind of see that in the middle right there for an age verification, the data elements to go along with that, which brings me to the next design element. This is very much use case driven, okay? So an age verification is completely different use case than a roadside stop with law enforcement. Matter of fact, when we started down this, we focused on those two use cases because they cover the gamut. Age verification is very restricted in what it's doing and what it's presenting versus law enforcement. You can imagine a roadside stop, the law enforcement officer is going to need all the information up to date and current. The age verification, very limited, which brings me to my next design element, data minimalization. That is a core component of this, and I'll give an example of that. Let's go back to age verification. When I'm purchasing that liquor, right, or whatever else requires me to be 21, and I consent, it's only passing a few data elements that are needed to assert that I'm 21. So it doesn't need to pass date of birth, for example. It passes an assertion that, hey, you're above 21. And also it passes a photo ID because, you know, there's still a human involvement or human interaction in this workflow, right? The cashier on the other side is going to want to look and say, okay, yeah, I get it. Your device is saying that you're 21. Oh, and that is you. Okay? So that's what I mean by data minimalization, is just the amount of data or assertions that are needed for that use case. Going to the extreme with a roadside stop, that would require everything. So law enforcement officer, when he or she does that workflow and you know, you do a verification, they're going to want to see everything, including your driver privilege and a lot of the most recent information about you. Now, all of these design elements are encoded in a standard, which is another important point. This system or this mobile driver's license concept is interoperable because of the standards. And there is a body, International Standards Organization, ISO, that developed a standard. It's 180.13-5 around this. So as long as you're designing around that standard, it will be interoperable, even amongst states. Good example is the TSA use case he mentioned. That's how we're doing that. TSA is creating the right side of this, a verifier, which, by the way, doesn't have to just be a mobile device. On the left side, it's always going to be a phone, right? So for the smart ID, a mobile driver's license, it's always going to be a phone. The verifier is very flexible. It can be a phone, or it can be a point-of-sale system, or in the case of like TSA, it can be their Cat5 system, right? So when you go up, it'll know that it's doing a verification of you because of these standards, because of the ISO standards. Okay. Now, these standards also outline, this is an important key too. We get asked a lot, well, what happens if you don't have a cell service? Well, they thought about that in the standards by specifying an offline and an online mode of this. You can imagine age verification. It doesn't need to talk home. By talk home, meaning going back to us, FLHSMV is the issuing authority. It doesn't need to do that. It's between devices. Okay, so it's using that strong encryption from device to device. There's no need to do any kind of online check. However, on the right side, you can see that it's a law enforcement use case. It would need to phone home to get the most current driving privilege. Because what happens in the offline mode is there's an update process, right? Once I get my credential down the first time, it regularly polls to check to see if there's any updates that need to happen. Well, with the law enforcement use case, you don't want anything to be stale. You want the most current, accurate information in real time. Driving privilege is a perfect example of that. And that's why this online mode is accommodated there. And by the way, I want to state, too, that with the standards, Florida, being technology forward-thinking, was actually the first state to get an independent certification around the standard. One of the things that we did was in our contract with our vendor for the Smart ID, we put a requirement in that they have to get an independent assessment or certification from a third party. And they used UL, which is under Ryder's Laboratory. They're the guys that when you look at your, you know, the electrical sockets or whatever, you'll see the little UL symbol. They do all kinds of certifications around standards. They actually certified Florida Smart ID as meeting that standard. And we're the first, not just in the country, but I think internationally, to go through that certification process. Other states have done like self-certification or compliance, basically checking their own boxes saying, hey, we meet the standards. We're the first to actually get real certification. So that's an important milestone. So that is it for describing. I told you I would be brief. And we will take any questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. Members, any questions? Representative Market.
Thank you, Chair, and I appreciate your presentation. Well, one of the things that we did, we talked about last year in committee was also adding registration and insurance information on the digital driver's license, if you will. Any updates on that, if you would?
Yeah, we're due to have that in production July 1.
Awesome. Thank you.
Representative Antone.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great presentation. Appreciate what you're doing. Hey, I do have one concern about your system. When you use the express thing, and I want to pick it up, like I just want to pick up my little license plate thing, sometimes it doesn't always work properly, and maybe it's just my fault. But I'll try to say I'm going into the office to pick it up, and it's not there. And then it eventually comes in the mail 3 or 4 weeks later. So that's just one thing. But my question here is, are you writing your software in-house or are you purchasing off the shelf?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We are doing both. The majority of it, when we started this modernization effort, I tried to find a system we could buy because modernization efforts, as I say all the time, are difficult. You've got, you know, back in the day, not as many things were documented on these older systems, and the people that you need to help you get through it have long since retired because they're 30, 40 years old. So we went down the road of we're going to write it ourselves, but if there's anything that we can buy, we will buy. So there are components that we're purchasing, but the title, the driver's license system, we wrote ourselves. The IFTRP system that I mentioned, we're buying. So it's really a mixture of both. And also, I'll be happy to come by your office and talk to you about the issue that you're having, and hopefully we can get that cleared up for you.
Thank you. Representative Yeager, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So you talk about driving privileges, so I assume that you mean suspended driver's license, things like that, will get notified instantly, mobily, that way the driver knows that your license is suspended, so don't wait for the mail to come, right? It's going to be more instantaneous, I would assume.
You recognize?
You're referring to the mobile driver's license?
The mobile driver's license, yes.
That is the ability, and that's one of the things, thank you, that we pitch to the rental car companies. Right now, you go to rent a car, you show your driver's license, they can verify your ID, but we told them, what if you could verify if I have the privilege to drive? That's not always the case, and they don't, they're not able to check that right now just by looking at your DL. So you're right, with the ability to phone home that Chad talked about, you could get the most up-to-date information as you just stated.
Yeah.
Also with that, thank you, Chair. Also with that, I mean, any tie-ins like the clerk of court systems where traffic infractions, traffic courts, things like that, they owe on a ticket where they can see that one place, kind of, here's your driving history.
Recognized.
Yeah, we have recently been contacted by our vendor that they have been in contact with some of the state agencies as well that have their other ideas that people have for incorporating into the Florida Smart ID. I fully suspect that this will be something that features will be added each year.
Any follow up? Representative Burfield.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank you for the protections you put in place for single women. I heard that, and I think that is absolutely fantastic. So I want to commend you for that. Thank you.
If no one else has any questions, I did have just a few. On the adoption of the Smart ID, I believe you said something in the range of about 80,000 downloads of the application. Is that correct?
We have about 81,000 folks that are actually using the application. There again, we haven't done any type of outreach, promotion, or anything because we've been working trying to add these new features. I fully expect that number to, you know, go even higher once the department does some type of campaign, once, you know, leadership decides that we're ready to move in that direction. I think especially adding the insurance and registration data is going to be huge in helping us getting that. And as more and more people, because you can get it with our online portal. We recently shut down the old website that we have, and now everyone has to use the online customer portal. Well, within that portal, we also give you information about the Florida Smart ID. So I think the numbers will actually increase. And as we get more use cases, TSA, and get some real, retailer on board with us as well, I think that's going to help drive the adoption as well.
Do you anticipate doing any official outreach programs in the next fiscal year?
I'm not sure. I mean, that's something that we'll have to discuss internally with leadership. But I think the thought in the past was to wait until we got the insurance and registration information added. But as far as outreach to retailers, we have been doing that for several months now. I won't name some of them, but we, like I said, rental car companies, folks that sell age-restricted products, we've reached out to healthcare, all in the effort to get people ready that this is coming. And it's going to be the wave of the future, and it's here now.
Thank you. And I had one final question before I turn it back over to the other members of the committee. Is there any distinction or bugs that need to be worked out with the digital driver's licenses used for CDLs or alternative driver's licenses other than just the standard state-issued driver's license?
Currently, it is for your standard driver's license and for ID cards. I don't believe that we've had any discussions about the CDL. I don't think I'm wrong about that, but if I am, I will get back with you to straighten that out.
Thank you. Representative Yeager, I believe you raised your hand again.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So as we look at the whole modernization of the process and the network, how about things like titles? I know a big issue is lien releases on titles, right? Can take a long time. You look at the dealer world, they have 30 days to produce a hard plate in their paper plates. And a lot of times a holdup is the banks getting the lien releases off the titles. I mean, any thought of in your modernization of maybe digitalizing that process a bit with financial institutions and banks across the country?
You recognize.
Thank you. I don't know if that has been mentioned as one of the things to include our modernization effort, but it's certainly something that we can talk to you about, as well as working with the dealer system is in our phase three of modernization. The title process is something that we're working on right now. I'm sure somebody's sitting back at the department going, yes, we have talked about this, and I probably just haven't been part of that conversation. But as I stated, I will, if I'm missing something, I'll get back with you.
Any follow-up? Representative Burfield, you're recognized.
Thank you. When the chair was asking you some questions, you had commented about the individuals that you're talking about regarding the point of sales. So the entities that you would be collaborating with. Has there been any discussions with other agencies like DBPR so that they're also prepared to collaborate? So we're closing that loop as well.
You recognize?
Yes, we have talked with other agencies. We have regular meetings with ACA because they are thinking about using Florida Smart ID as a gateway into getting services as well. I cannot remember if DBPR has been on the list or not, but that is one of the things that we have actively tried to do. There are several agencies on the list that we still yet to talk to that we plan to talk to. One of the things, even within our own system, we want to use Florida Smart ID as a way to gain access to our portal. And if we're able to do that and we can truly have assurance of your identity using the Florida Smart ID, there are even more services that we can offer
online as well. So great point. There are other agencies that we need to talk to. I think we've just been actively trying to get these other things incorporated, like the insurance and registration. But there are other agencies that I think this could be a value to as well, as far as gaining access to services.
Mr. Chair?
Any follow-up? Yep.
I would just encourage you to do that, because if that is really one of the places that we're focused on trying to have a significant impact, it would probably be critical for them to be able to utilize that system or to provide any input as to how they may need to work within that system. So I just appreciate that.
Thank you. Representative Daly, you're recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. Thank you for your presentation and for your modernization efforts, and thank you for the reminder, because my registration expires next month, so I was able to do it in about the 5 minutes here up on the dais. Logged into the portal, was able to navigate it and do it, so I appreciate it very much. Makes it very easy, and now I'm legal again, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Daly, for telling me you weren't paying attention during the presentation. Representative Brackett, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. One question I can understand on the idea, and I think it's amazing, by the way, I also looked at it while you were talking, and I think I can see the link of how you would link insurance and registration to my name, my vehicle, because I turned that into you. Are you thinking about a way that you could add additional information to that? The example I would give you is my minor daughter, who's 16, where the car is in my name, the insurance is in my name, and the driver's license is in her name.
You reckon?
There's a young lady sitting behind me right now who's smiling from ear to ear because she tells me about this every single week. That is what you mentioned. Is she says we got to figure out a way to do that. It is something that we're thinking about and working on, and I'm going to have to hear when I leave here, I told you so, that someone's going to ask you that. So I do appreciate that question, but you're right. It is something that we have to think about. And also, I pulled up my list. DBPR, we have had discussions with as well.
Thank you. Any follow-up? Representative Lopez?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have a quick question, kind of following up on Representative Burfield's. As we have thousands of people exiting our prison systems who really need to have IDs immediately, I hope that you're also working with the Department of Corrections and hopefully with the Federal Bureau of Prisons who release thousands of people, and we need to know who they are, where they are, and they need it immediately. So I think it's a. I think this is a fantastic sort of vehicle and tool for all of us, but I think it'll be more specifically useful for people who have never either driven, so they need a Florida ID, or they need their driver's license back when they're released. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for response.
Oh, thank you, and as you know, I think that the department is involved, with the Department of Corrections. I think we, from time to time, send like Floramobiles there as well. But adding Florida Smart ID, that is one thing that I had not thought about. But I certainly agree.
Members, any further questions? All right, seeing none. In conclusion, I think everyone can see that these technology implementations, they're important multi-year investments in Florida's future. And they require a sizable investment of resources. I'd like to thank all of our presenters once again for coming here and presenting. We appreciate you being here today to share and educate us on the work that you're doing. This work benefits not only our work processes, but improves the level of customer service for our citizens across the state of Florida. With that, members, this concludes our committee agenda today. If there is no further business before the committee, Vice Chair Cheney moves that we rise, and without objection, I call this meeting adjourned.